The Star Trek Discovery season finale recap is sponsored by TrueCar. TrueCar's got some useful tips that you might not be aware of, like how a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Not sure if they're doing that with any of the upholstery on the Discovery, but seems like a good idea. Removing excess weight can also improve your gas mileage. And you can place a keychain remote underneath your chin to increase its range. Not sure if the same thing works with a Star Trek communicator, but I would imagine this, the philosophy and the physics are the same. Here's another tip that you might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars too. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying a new car. With the certified dealer network and nationwide inventory, nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what other people paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with a TrueCar certified dealer. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Star Trek Discovery Season 1 is over, but we are just getting started here on our Star Trek Discovery Season Finale Recap. And now, here are the two people who say, I'll have what Clint Howard is having. I'm Rob Suspino here with Jessica Leese. Jessica, how are you?
Rob, I think all things considered, like that weird dust that Clint Howard gave us, I'm feeling pretty great.
Yes, we are here to talk about the season one finale, Jess. And it was a night where that wrapped things up probably a lot tidier than we were ever expecting. We had a very shocking reveal at the end of the episode with the USS Enterprise, the Pike Enterprise, showing up. So space whale meat to chew on here, Jess.
Oh, space whale, so tasty.
So I this has been a season finale with a mixed reaction. I think that there are some people really not happy with it, other people lukewarm, and obviously some people higher on it. So we'll talk through everything that happened. But just what was your reaction to the season one finale of Discovery?
Well, I think much like Space Whale itself, I wished that I had a little bit more to chew on.
Mm. Why? I feel like that's a hearty piece of meat from a Gormagander.
No, it was kind of a tiny little sliver. Triangle of
yeah.
Something.
A little bit like a food court, like here, free sample.
Yeah. It certainly felt like that. And I mean, you know that Klingon homeworld sample lady has got to be the lowest job on the totem pole.
Yeah. At the Orion outpost overall. Yeah. There was a lot of the things that I did like about this episode. I just felt like that the ending of this arc that we spent so much time on felt like that they a little bit yada yada'd through the outcome of this climactic Klingon aggression.
Yeah, well, this has become the pattern, I think, in dramatic television of late. You have the really great episode is like the penultimate episode where you have all the climactic action and then the finale just sort of ties everything together. And this really put a bow on everything very quickly and without really getting into the nitty gritty details. And I didn't really see a single thing in the episode that I found surprising.
Mm-hmm. Well,
apart from maybe the appearance of Clint Howard as an Orion traitor.
What about the appearance of the Enterprise? You saw that coming?
Well, you knew it was going to happen at some point, maybe not this early, but given that this occurs contemporaneously with original series Star Trek characters, mm-hmm. You knew they were going to show up. You knew you were getting at least a Spock at some point. P.S. Spock is already on the Enterprise, so we may be seeing him at the beginning of next season.
Whoa. So I was actually surprised that they ended up doing that. I thought that they would try to avoid this as far along as they could. So we'll talk about that in terms of what we can expect in season two. you know, I did like the mission to Kronos. I thought that was fun. I really liked that the world building they did there on the Orion outpost. And so I thought I really did enjoy all of that stuff. And then I liked the reveal of, oh no, they're actually going to destroy the Klingon homeworld. But I did think that the ultimate solution of no, let's give the Klingon homeworld destruction device to Laurel. Not that she sort of like won us over or anything like that. It's like, okay, you seem good enough.
Yeah, it's like, who do we trust not to blow up the Klingon homeworld? How about the Klingon?
Yeah, and I don't even know if we trust her to not blow up the Klingon homeworld. It's like, well, maybe this will be enough of a distraction for the Klingons to retreat. If they do blow up the homeworld, it won't be us that did it. We just put the bomb there and then gave it to one person who, I mean, it seems like if you go back, it's like, okay, we're just arming one side of one of these conflicts in another part of the world. And who knows how it turns out?
Yeah, it is a bit of that. And I guess they're just counting on Laurel to love her homeworld enough and to be so committed to uniting the 24 great houses that she's not going to burn it all down and start over from scratch.
I mean, did I miss something? Like, did Laurel have a vision that was really in line with anything that Starfleet believed in? I mean, up until last week's episode, she was saying like, hey, you don't like us? Conquer us. We'll destroy you. And now it's sort of like, okay, you run the Klingon Empire, Laurel.
Yeah, it sure seemed like they went from the Klingons being 95% done with the war and ready to win it to all of a sudden, like, the Klingons just backing down and be like, yeah, okay, we don't need a war.
Yeah, I mean, it was a calculated risk. Also, I mean, the Klingons were at Earth. And then for them to just completely unanimously, like, kapla, all right, let's get out of here. Call the whole thing off.
Yeah, and where were all the Klingons? Seriously, I know it was an Orion outpost, but for going to the Klingon homeworld, they sure didn't see any Klingons.
Right.
Were they all at Earth?
Well, I guess that this was sort of a Orion like satellite base that they had there, some like Orion embassy that they had set up there. I feel like that, you know, for all of the Orion slave women, and I don't even know if we've had a lot of them. It's just sort of like that was an iconic thing in the original Star Trek. It was nice to see some more Orions.
Yeah, I guess so. Like some diversity of body type and gender was much appreciated.
Yeah, and it did seem like that there were a lot of humans hanging out on the Klingon homeworld. You would think that that would be really frowned upon during this aggression.
Yeah, I would kind of not want to be hanging around there if, you know, it's like being behind enemy lines. But still, you know, you go to an expat bar in the U.S. and not everybody in the bar is Australian or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also thought it was interesting, and not to go too far into this, but it seemed like there was like a lot of humans working at the Orion Outpost strip club.
Yeah, that was a little odd. Yeah, that's a little odd, and especially like I thought that Earth at this point is kind of post-currency, and this seems like a very capitalist venture.
I don't know. There's a lot of things that we can really get into. Well, let's stick with the big picture stuff. I'm surprised, Jess, and I think either you might be by this too. Captain Emperor Giorgio ends up surviving all of this.
Yeah, you thought that she was sort of gearing up for a noble sacrifice, but it turns out that there's nothing noble about her. She's really just kind of a douche.
Yes, but she loves strippers. She is probably so much fun at like a bachelorette party.
Well, unless she just like shows up at the bachelorette party and like buys herself some escorts and leaves. That's very fun.
Classic Emperor Giorgio.
Yeah, I'm not inviting her to my bachelorette party.
No, she would be the life of a bachelorette party until she ultimately leaves with whatever entertainment you hire for their said party. But Yeah, I did think that we were probably a little bit on the nose with, you know, Michael Burnham giving her speech in terms of like, hey, aren't we what Starfleet is all about? And then I did think that we spent a lot of time at sort of the commencement ceremony for Michael Burnham.
Yeah, that was a bit much. I thought it was a little ironic that we get all this posturing about, like, what is Starfleet all about? And then it turns out that Starfleet, like, gave a Terran emperor a whole bunch of hooker money and then sent her to commit genocide. That doesn't seem very Starfleet-y to me.
Yeah, but desperate times, Jess.
I guess, but this is, like, we were supposed to be so shocked by Ben Sisko fabricating video footage, and this is, like, way far beyond the pale on that. But, yeah, and then we spend a lot of time with Chewbacca in the throne room at the end of the episode.
Right, right. And he did get a medal this time around. Jess, let me ask you this question, because that I want to know if the Starfleet and the Federation is just incredibly Terran-centric. If this was the Vulcan homeworld that the Klingons were about to destroy, do you feel like Starfleet would have given the same order to put the bomb inside of Kronos, to destroy all of Kronos, if it was the Vulcan homeworld at risk?
Well, didn't the Vulcan homeworld get destroyed in the Star Trek movies?
It does sound familiar. I think that was that in the Kelvin universe. Did that happen in the first, the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek?
Yes, it did.
Yes. So, you know, we were not put in that same position. So, I don't know what is canon in this universe versus that universe. But I kind of feel like that Starfleet doesn't give that order if it's going to be the Andorian homeworld or the Vulcan homeworld.
Well, in fairness, destruction.
Yeah.
In fairness, the Starfleet headquarters is on Earth, and like all of Starfleet's high up people, they run everything from Earth. So it's not just like, here's where all the humans live and the humans are the best race. It's like, here's where our administrative offices are.
Yeah. And it would be a lot to set up somewhere else. Is that really what it comes down to?
Yeah. Yeah. And you lose a lot of people. Like, if they blow up Earth or they take it over, you lose like all your high level 4-star generals and what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ultimately, Michael Burnham is reinstated, gets a full pardon. I mean, I do feel like that this has to have been somewhat of a surprise, because you and I had been talking about potentially some sort of a time travel element to untangle all of this.
Yeah, it's true. I was 100% wrong on that. I thought they were going to reset everything because this Klingon war felt like it was doing too much damage. But, oh no, we just kind of waved the Klingon war away with our magic bomb-setting-off iPad. And then it turns out that if you save everybody from the war that you started, you get to pretend that you didn't start that war.
Yeah, well, she reminded everybody, because I find, Jess, that people don't like to be reminded of their hypocrisy. But when Michael Burnham does it, then they give her a medal. Well, because I try to do that with my wife often. I'm like, honey, but didn't you say, aren't you the same person that said that? It just makes her more mad. She never gives me an award.
Well, you don't have the same kind of leverage. Like, you can't be like, yeah, well, honey, I saved the galaxy.
I guess so.
It's a pretty good card to play.
It is a good card to play. And so everybody at Discovery gets a bunch of awards, but they're not letting Saru keep on being the captain of Discovery. That they are off to Vulcan to go pick up a new captain. Sarek is along for the ride. Just any word on who the new captain of Discovery will be?
Well, I'm just pissed that it's not Saru. Like, hashtag justice for Saru.
Yeah.
He didn't even get a promotion. What's that?
Right. Because I believe that Michael Burnham was restored to her rank of commander, right? So are Saru and Michael Burnham the same rank now?
Are they both going to be the XO? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me either.
That seems weird. That seems like a recipe for disaster. And no, I'm not talking about a recipe for a Kelpian. No. So I don't know exactly how they're going to work that out. And so are we presuming that the captain of Discovery will be a Vulcan?
That would be interesting. I would actually really like to see that happen, because I think one of the things that we keep seeing in Star Trek, and I think you and I have talked about this a little bit, is that it's so Earth-centric, and like everybody that's a main character is an Earthling. You never see a non-human captain being the focus of the show. And I think there would be some really interesting ground to cover if you had a Vulcan being the captain of like a majority Earthling ship. There could be some really interesting tension there that, you know, we could cover if we had Saru be the captain, but putting a Vulcan in that place would be almost as good.
But do you feel like that, is it a little redundant because Michael Burnham is already, like, she's technically, she is, you know, anatomically and biologically a human. I don't think anatomically was the right word, but she is, I guess it is, but she's a human. But she's sort of raised Vulcan, so she acts like a Vulcan, even though she is a human. Would that be sort of like repeating too much Vulcan in the bridge crew?
You know, 99% of the time I forget that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they bring Sarek out every so often and she's like, hi, Dad. And that's about the only indication we get that she's a Vulcan. She could just be like a sort of chilly human most of the time. And I don't think it's necessarily like she's not very Vulcan most of the time to me. And I think it almost feels like this is a tacked on piece of like fan fiction thing. Like, you write your original character and it's like, oh, she's Spock's adopted sister because her parents were tragically killed. Like, that is Bush League fan fiction. And it would be all right with me if we just sort of trucked out Dad Sarek every so often. And then we just kind of ignored the Vulcan thing from Burnham for the rest of the time.
Jess, do you think that we will recognize the captain of Discovery? Will it be anybody that has any sort of important legacy in the Star Trek canon?
Well, I'm trying to think of who there could possibly be, because at this point, nobody from the original series, or at least from the original series main cast, would have been high up enough in the ranks to be the captain of the new ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can't imagine, like, it could very well be a bit player in kind of the same way that we've had some of these little nods to the original series so far, like with Mudd and with Sarek and probably with Spock in the premiere of the next season. But I don't think it's going to be somebody that everybody is going to immediately glom onto and know, oh yeah, that person was on the original series.
Could it be like Tuvok's dad?
Sure, it could be somebody's dad.
It could be
an ancestor of somebody from a later season, I guess. Like, you could have like Riker's grandfather or something like that. And it would be, but that would be so fan wanky. I really hope that's not the way we go with it.
What if it was played by Jonathan Frakes?
If it's played by Jonathan Frakes, then I'm back on board.
Okay. Then, yeah, that would be fun to, if we ever did some sort of like a recasting where, you know, we have somebody who's old or older than somebody that they played, but they could be playing like a relative of a person. Like, I think that I would be on board with that.
Yeah, that might be okay, but you'd have to not rely too heavily on it. Like, it would have to be something that you remarked upon once and then let the show go in the direction that the show goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, if we had somebody who was either, you know, that they were like, for like, just like a, you know, a terrible example, like if Will Wheaton was going to come on and play like some Crusher, you know, ancestor, where he's like playing the Wesley Crusher grandfather role. Like, I think that would be very fun to see.
It would be fun, but you'd have to be careful that they're not just reprising their old role.
Right. We don't want to be like Back to the Future.
Right. I don't want to see old Wesley Crusher show up with two neckties sending faxes.
Or when Michael J. Fox is playing his daughter. No, we don't want to see that. But could it be maybe like T'Pol's daughter or son is the captain of the Discovery?
Well, sure. Why not? Because I guess everybody on Vulcan is
related. They love Enterprise also.
Yeah, they do love Enterprise. There's been a lot of Enterprise nods to the point where I feel like maybe that should be my summer binge watch to get me ready for next season.
Yeah, I don't think it could hurt. You know, there's a lot of Enterprise people that tell you underrated Enterprise.
Yeah, I don't know. That first season, like all Star Trek seasons apart from this series, I think that first season is really rough.
Jump in season two.
All right. I'll do it. You know. I mean, I tell people to watch DS9 starting with like mid-season three, so.
Why not? Jess, were you surprised at all with the resolution to Ash Tyler? Because I have to say that this was a surprise to me, because I thought that, okay, Vok is gone, and I kind of like that they brought in that he can access Vok's memories, and I said, like, oh, this is kind of fun that he sort of, like, is the Klingon expert on the crew, even though he's back to being human, Ash Tyler. But I was actually surprised to see him ride off into the sunset with Laurel as sort of, like, this person who's caught between the two worlds and now will work as some sort of ambassador.
Yeah, that I was not surprised that he ran off into the sunset, because really, where's he going to go with Burnham at this point? But I was surprised that it was Laurel he went off with, because he and Laurel have a really complicated history, and I yes. can't imagine that the Ash Tyler side of him is comfortable with her at all.
No, especially after all of the torture and all of the other things that went on between the two of them. But yep, he's gonna go off.
Yeah, that's weird. I feel like they're just kind of putting him on the bench, and they're going to bring him back at some point next season, probably after Burnham gets over him and gets under someone else, if you know what I mean.
Whoa. Okay. All right. Jess, we also got some answers on the Klingon anatomy that were brought up earlier in the season, and Discovery is rewriting some Star Trek canon.
Yeah, they certainly are splitting some strange hairs.
Double barrel action.
Yeah. Well, I think we knew on some, like, I think it was canon that they had like two spleens or something stupid like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, now we have additional Star Trek canon, which really complicates a lot of previous Star Trek stories, like the love triangle between Riker, Troy, and Worf.
Yeah, it's something I'm trying not to think too hard about.
I'm going to think about it a lot, I think. All right. So when we go back to this planet, this Orion base, I really did enjoy this. First off, that I love Tilly so much. She was great in this episode where I guess somehow she didn't know that Emperor Georgiou was Captain Georgiou. And so I liked when Emperor Georgiou requested that Tilly be on this mission. And I love Tilly's reaction to learning that this was actually Emperor Georgiou from the Mirror Universe. And then her reaction of she's giving what do they give? The sort of like the Heil?
Yeah, they
sort of like a salute. Like, no. It's like Michael Burns, like, don't do that. Do not do that.
Yeah, well, and I think it's so absurd that nobody apart from like the people in the transporter room know that that is the Emperor. Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, because I think that it's like, well, what did Michael Burnham do? Like, Michael Burnham's like this famous person that, oh, she killed her captain. She mutinied. That's her thing. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, I didn't mutiny against my captain. She's here. She's back. Like, oh, OK. But I picked her up while we were in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, we cool now.
Yeah, everything is fine. She just happened to go to the Mirror Universe. It was a whole misunderstanding. But were you sad to learn that the Betazoids have been subjugated in the Mirror Universe?
Well, the Betazoids do okay eventually, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly how they make out in the Mirror Universe, but I think they end up all right.
They end up okay. So, Jess, we pack up this away team that's going to be Ash Tyler, Michael Burnham, Tilly, and Emperor Georgiou, and they go down to the very seedy Orion outpost. And there's just so much fun stuff that's going on here, especially with Clint Howard and Tilly.
Yeah, Clint Howard is such a treasure. I mean, he's so, even as a child on the original series of Star Trek, FYI.
Whoa.
He, even as a child, he looked kind of strange and creepy, and this has just persisted into his adulthood, and he kind of trades on being strange and creepy looking, and let's make him even stranger and creepier looking by making him an Orion and painting him green.
Yeah, so he is hanging out, and so we have Tilly, who has the quote unquote drone in her, like that's her job to go guard the drone. We see then Emperor Giorgio go off into the House of Ill Repute to go and hang out with this couple. And she has one job. Okay, don't lose the drone. But she ends up inhaling this smoke, this volcanic ash. And I thought, okay, well, now she's going to lose the drone. But that isn't really what happens. What was the purpose of Tilly ending up passing out?
I thought the whole thing was like, we're just going to take the most straight-laced character and get them super high because we're on the drug planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was kind of a non-starter, because I feel like this is a show that is not afraid to talk in graphic detail about how the Klingons ate Captain Giorgio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen butts and boobs, and we've had people say the F word, and now we're not going to go to the obvious dark place where a guy basically roofies a girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought they really, like, they went right to the edge and then they backed way off in a way that didn't make a lot of narrative sense.
Yeah. What
not
was
that
he
I'm
doing?
Saying she should have been.
Yeah. But like, I thought he was at least going to steal her briefcase.
Yeah. Yeah. It sure seemed like he was, had some bad intentions, but no, he's just like this fairy godmother that goes around giving drugs to random people in bars and like, hey, I'm gonna be entertained by you being high, and that's all I get out of it.
Yeah, but I loved when then Tilly ends up calling over. She opens the suitcase and then sees, oh no, this isn't a drone, it's a bomb. And she calls Michael Burnham and she's like, so I'm high, and also this is a bomb. It was great. I have so much fun with Tilly.
Yeah, Tilly is a great character. I really enjoyed her. And I think it's an angle that we don't get a lot in the Star Trek universe. This like kind of straight-laced, overachieving cadet who's a little bit socially awkward.
Ensign now.
Yes, now she's an ensign. Good for her.
Mm-hmm.
But you really spend more time in most of the Star Trek series with the higher ranking staff members, and you kind of never go to the lower decks unless they get a dedicated episode in Next Gen, and the dedicated episode is kind of forgettable.
Yeah, I do feel like that she certainly earned her stripes to be an ensign, to the point where that it seems like there are a lot of people on Discovery that don't do nearly what Tilly does.
Yeah, seriously, Tilly could be promoted to captain at some point.
Yeah. Now, did they say in the Mirror Universe, Jess, that Captain Tilly is actually older, or she just looks older?
She just looks older because she's had a lot of hard living.
The killing will make you older.
Killing ages you. That's what I learned from this episode.
Yeah, that's what we found out. So on the Orion outpost, we also see like a long conversation between Michael Burnham and Ash Tyler about their relationship. And with really the human homeworld on the brink of annihilation, and we really have a lot of time to have relationship talk.
Yeah, this got a little bit into the weeds, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Nobody is faulting Michael Burnham for not wanting to be with Tyler anymore. I think everybody understands that, including Tyler. We don't need it explicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we get the whole backstory about how the Klingons killed her family. And then not only that, then they ate her dinner, which really rubbed her the wrong way. Really.
Okay, hold on. Like, point of clarification on this.
Yes.
So the table was set for dinner.
Yes.
And it was, you know, Papa Burnham, Mama Burnham, Michael. They set the table for dinner. Klingons show up.
Mm-hmm.
Michael hides in like under the sink or whatever. Klingons kill Mama Burnham and Papa Burnham. Klingons sit down and eat the dinner.
Yes.
Did the Klingons not notice that there was a third place set at the table?
Hmm. Yeah. I guess this is a little bit of a Goldilocks situation. And then they went and then took a nap in the Burnham family's beds and then noticed that there was a bed that was the most comfortable.
It was just right.
It was just right. Yeah, I thought the story was going to turn that then they ate her parents. But no, they just ate the dinner that they made.
Well, yeah, that's where I thought it was going as well. But, you know, Klingons eat a lot. Maybe they needed, like, another course.
Yeah, maybe it was just a very filling dinner that Michael Burnham's parents made.
Yeah, I don't know what the Burnham household eats. I would assume if they were staying on the outpost for 3 extra days after all their stuff is packed up to move, they were probably getting takeout.
They were going to vacation on Mars, Jess. Is that a fun destination?
I don't know what Mars is like in the future, but I imagine it's probably all built up, like Thor Equities went in and moved in and like built resorts and stuff.
So you think there's like some sort of like Mall of America set up on Mars where it's like all the people that went to the Super Bowl, like, yeah, it was way too cold to go outside. But then you go in a Mall of America and it's like a whole city in there.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of like in Toronto when they have like all those underground tunnels connecting the buildings.
Okay.
So that you don't have to go outside. I think it's genius, actually. And I can't wait to, like, I hope it happens in my lifetime.
Okay. So Captain Georgia, we saw her. She is going to drop the bomb. And then it seems weird that they have like the bomb. And then it wasn't going to detonate at a specific time. It was like it was all set up. And then they were going to then set it off by iPad. What? So they were going to go back to the ship and do that?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. This whole plan was weird. And like, I don't know what the cover plan was, if everybody understood it to be something that didn't obliterate the homeworld. Like, I'm not sure what they thought was actually going to happen. And how come nobody thought, oh, I bet this isn't just a drone taking pictures. I bet it's going to explode.
What is with this biologically linked explosive device, Jess?
That's also very technobabbly.
We have a bomb and it can't be detonated in any other way except for the person whose signature it matches. That's the only person there. And we're going to link it up to the Emperor from the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, I feel like they stole that plot point from the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Like they had a special map in the last Hunger Games movie that could only be activated by the person it belonged to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then you could make the map explode.
I thought that the timeline got pretty wonky here, where then we see Michael Burnham. She has this conversation with Emperor Georgia in the volcano and says, hey, if you're going to go through with this, you're going to have to watch me die again. I know you won't do that. And she like puts the phaser up to her chest. And then the next thing we see then ends up being where Michael Burnham ends up having a conversation with the Admiral, where they're on the bridge. And then everybody on the bridge is on board with this plan.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's like the only people they didn't tell about the plan were the people that were executing it, which makes me think that they didn't expect these people to come back.
Right. And we have like a whole like I Am Spartacus type scene where every single member of the Discovery bridge crew in unison like stands up to say, hey, I agree with this plan. Let's not destroy Kronos today.
It was sort of like the equivalent of a slow clap.
Yeah, it really was. And then we end up then, you know, with Admiral Cornwell, like, oh, what do you have in mind? And then we cut to then Laurel is getting the bomb. And I just thought the show never set up like a glimmer of hope that we would think that, you know what, maybe Laurel is going to be the answer to this conflict.
Well, I feel like we just installed a, you know, a puppet dictator regime like we did in Central America. And it's just like, well, let's put someone in power and we'll just bank on the fact that they're grateful to us for putting them in power. Like, how is this not going to blow up in Starfleet's face eventually?
Well, I guess it doesn't, because the Klingons will eventually become our allies by the 24th century. But maybe a little bit of a bumpy road to get there, a bumpy forehead ridge to get there. Just I thought that another thing that they did not do a great job in, and again, I thought this was a fun season of television, but I thought they did do a great job of setting up why the 24 separate houses were such a disaster as opposed to a one unified Klingon Empire.
Well, with 24 houses, there's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of,
but we didn't really see that.
We didn't really, but you can extrapolate when you have 24 ruling houses, they're all going to be at war with each other all the time because also they're freaking Klingons, mm-hmm. and that's what Klingons do. So it's kind of like Laurel's grand vision, and I guess really Chakuvma's grand vision was if everybody is under one person, then we can concentrate on killing other people rather than killing each other.
Yeah. But just the whole philosophy of that, well, don't Klingons respect strength? So if somebody walks in and they end up having a bomb that can blow up the whole Klingon homeworld, it's like, I guess you're our leader now.
Yeah, that seemed a little bit, I mean, that was a little Return of the Jedi. It's like, why should you listen to me? Because I'm holding a thermal detonator.
A bounty hunter after my own heart. Like, fine,
my
I'll
kind
give
of
you.
Scum.
Yeah, my kind of scum. Careless. So, yeah, they liked her. They liked her as the torchbearer.
Yeah, I guess. I don't even know how long that's going to last because I'm pretty sure it takes a bit more than that to unite all 24 houses.
No, that was it. They said, okay, well, I guess you've got us by the, I don't even want to estimate the number of gonads that a Klingon has. But that's it. I guess you got us. You got us. Well played, Laurel. You'll be our new leader now.
Yeah, well, we'll see how she does.
We'll see. Do you think that we will see more of Laurel now installed as the head of the Klingon Empire?
I think we get glimpses. I don't get the sense that next season is going to be about Klingons. I think we might see Laurel from time to time, but I would guess her arc is pretty well wrapped up at this point, mm-hmm. and we'll be moving on to some sort of other conflict with somebody else next season.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited about that because I think that the things that I really liked about Star Trek Discovery Season 1 had nothing to do with the Klingons. It was actually very little of the Klingon subplot that I really felt like, oh, okay, more of that, please. So I thought the show really slowed down for me whenever we got to the Klingon stuff. So if we have a Season 2 that is not about Klingons, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I just wonder, how are they going to keep up with the pace and the drawing out of story arcs and the weird reveals? They have really set a high bar for themselves. And in season two, I don't know how they're going to up the ante. Like what whacked out fan theory is going to be proven correct mid-season next year.
Mm-hmm. So, well, let's talk a little bit about season two, because there's so much to speculate about. So we had the Enterprise appear, the Pike Enterprise. Now, we probably need to go back and watch the original Star Trek pilot of the cage or the menagerie in terms of the episode where they used all that footage. So we know Spock was part of that. Is there anybody from the original Enterprise bridge crew that's also in the original Star Trek pilot?
I don't think so, although you do get in that original pilot, which I've seen the actual unaired pilot, not just the recycled footage that they used again in the series. And one of the main characters is Majel Barrett playing somebody they call Number One.
Mm-hmm.
And I could certainly see her showing up as a character somewhere in all of this.
Yeah. So the big question is, will we see a recast Spock here in Discovery?
I think we kind of have to go there. If we're going to the Enterprise and we're making Sarek be Michael Burnham's adoptive father, that means that Michael Burnham and Spock have some sort of sibling relationship. And if we're not going to go there, then why did we even set all of that up? Like, if she's going to be raised by Vulcans, why did it have to be those Vulcans and not some random other Vulcans?
Okay. My second question for you, Jess, and I agree. Okay. I think we will see Spock. Is it possible, could we get Zachary Quinto as Spock here in Star Trek Discovery.
Please, I hope that's what we get.
Yes. I get the sense, I feel like we won't get that, but I don't know what else Zachary Quinto is doing that we can't get that.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much Spock full-time now, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, is he... Oh, no, I'm only movie Spock. I mean, he has done... and this is like a little bit of a premise pilot for IMD bags. So in 2016, he did Star Trek Beyond. He also did an episode of the Jim Gaffigan show. He was in Snowden, which nobody saw. He was in Aardvark. What is that?
I hope it's a live action adaptation of the popular children's book series featuring Arthur.
So yeah, he's in Aardvark. And then he is also in the untitled Star Trek sequel, which I believe that there were rumors that Quentin Tarantino was going to be at the helm of that, but I am suspecting that maybe Quentin Tarantino is not going to be at the helm of anything too soon.
I think Quentin Tarantino is a little bit too involved in his Clint Howard dust.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he's in a couple other things, which, you know, a Hotel Artemis post-production biopunk, a TV series. So, I mean, if I don't think that he's going to be a main character. You don't think we can't get Zachary Quinto one or two episodes?
It doesn't sound like any of these projects are any higher profile than Star Trek Discovery. And I would imagine he could probably be pried away from whatever low-level paying work that is to do one episode.
Yeah. Is he worried that he is going to be typecast as Spock if Zachary Quinto was to appear as Spock on Star Trek Discovery?
Well, I don't think you take the role of Spock in the first place if you are not expecting to get typecast.
Yeah, because I'll tell you what, Zachary Quinto, there was a time when he had risen to the top of the Heroes post-show power rankings. But Jess, Milo V, I think, has now warped past Zachary Quinto. He's number one with a bullet.
Absolutely. I think he's on fire.
Inhaling more smoke than Clint Howard, I hear, even.
Yeah, I mean, it is a heart-stopping meteoric rise to the top.
Yeah. So yeah, if Zachary Quinto, you know, he looked like he was really off to the races here, but I think that maybe I feel like he's available.
We could get Quinto. I'm not worried about that.
You okay? So you feel like you think we will get Quinto?
I think we'll get Quinto.
Okay. I think that that should be the hashtag for this episode of for going to season two. There will be Quinto or there won't be Quinto. I say there won't be Quinto. I think we get some other unknown Star Trek Spock.
I'm taking the over on this, and there will be Quinto kind of makes me picture him. Like in the Daniel Day-Lewis get up.
Yeah. Do you think that we will spend a lot of time with the Enterprise NCC-1701, or do you think that it will be just a one episode with them?
I think we spend one episode with them and we get our jollies from it. And then the ships part ways to go explore the galaxy.
Okay. This is a question I will have for you. Will the crew of the Enterprise be wearing the same Starfleet uniforms that the crew of Discovery wears?
I think they will. And then I think at some point in the series, maybe even as soon as next season, I think the crew of Discovery ends up in some uniforms that are more reminiscent of the original series.
Well, what is the point of that? Why did we put them in these uniforms?
I don't know. These uniforms are better in every possible way. Like these uniforms look like something I would personally purchase and wear myself.
You would wear a Discovery jumpsuit?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, you could nap in it. It looks like jammies.
Is it a onesie?
It's not a onesie. It's a two-piece pajama set, but, you know, you could do yoga in it. You could, you know,
I don't sense the show's gonna change uniforms, but I think that it'll be an interesting question of why is, if everybody is Starfleet and everybody else is wearing the jumpsuit uniforms, why would the crew of the Enterprise not be wearing these uniforms?
Or maybe you end up with like different types of uniforms based on what you are. Like the Discovery is mainly a science vessel. Maybe these are science uniforms. I could speculate, but I think at some point you do have to converge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you have to have some sort of a meeting there. But who knows what's going to happen? What will the storyline involve? Is this just going to be a Michael Burnham, Sarek, Spock storyline? Or do you think that there will be something going on with Captain Pike?
I think Captain Pike makes an appearance as well. I do not know if it'll be movie Pike or if it'll be some rando, but I think we definitely get Pike and we definitely get Spock, and I don't know to what end we get them.
Yeah, I think you could do a lot with Pike. I think that there is not a lot of canon outside of the cage slash menagerie and what he did appear in the 2009 J.J. Abrams film.
Yes, he did.
Okay. All right. And so I think that really you have a lot to play with. I don't think that there's going to be any sort of like, oh, no, they can't do that with Captain Pike. I think that he's somebody that you can play around with.
Yeah.
Give him
yeah,
a real story.
Give him all of the captain-y qualities that he got as Kirk's mentor in the first Star Trek movie. I think you have a pretty robust character there that can go a lot of places.
Yeah, I think that'll be exciting. So we'll see what we end up doing with that. No word on when season two of Discovery is coming, right?
No, no word yet. But I would imagine we probably get it in, I would say at least 6 months and probably more like a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll see. September was when the first season started. So I think that if they were able to, you know, keep everything on schedule, I think that they would probably prefer to have it also premiere in that same sort of slot and then do the schedule the same way around. Jess, anything else you want to get into from the Discovery season finale?
Oh, I think we've gotten through quite a lot, I think.
Isik for your thoughts, Jess?
Where does that expression come from?
I don't know. I felt like that was something that they were setting up and ultimately did not go anywhere.
Yeah, that was a little... There was a lot here that I felt like they just sort of hand-waved. And, you know, the breeze from all of the hand-waving this episode, you know, could power many, many Starfleet vessels.
Yeah. We didn't talk too much about Stamets or really at all in this recap of the episode, but we put the Spore Drive on hold. Do you think the Spore Drive makes a reappearance in season two, or do you think we back off of that?
I think maybe we put the Spore Drive on the shelf for good. I think maybe the final answer is that they can't make it work without a human and or tardigrade subject.
They ate all the tardigrades.
Right. Like all the tardigrades are curled up in little balls in space and they, you know, it's inhumane to use them to navigate. I think if the Spore Drive were something that they were going to continue with, there would be Spore Drives elsewhere in the Trek universe because Spore Drive is just too powerful. There has to be a reason that they're not going to use it again.
Yeah, you would think that, but I watched After Trek and they had on some of the show's producers and they were asked about, is that it for the Spore Drive? And their answer was, hey, you don't have a Maserati to not use it. So they made it seem
was
like
Negan driving the Spore Drive.
Yes, they made it seem like that the Maserati Spore Drive will be back.
Yeah, I guess so. And they already paid for that slick animation of the Discovery flipping over and turning white and then flipping back.
Yeah, and they have all the black alert sound effects. So, okay, we'll see what happens ultimately. But overall, Jess, if you had to grade season one of Discovery, what grade would you give it?
I give it an A.
A!
I think it's the best first season of any Star Trek, and I would say it's in the conversation to be a top 10 season of any of the Star Treks.
Wow. Okay. I don't think I would be as high on it, but I think I would give it a B+. And I think that that really comes up. If I was going to grade the first half versus the second half, I would say that probably the first half of Discovery, I think I'd probably give it a C plus or maybe a B minus if I was in a really good mood. But I do think that the back half of this season, I think I'd give it an A. The Mirror Universe stuff was really, really fun. I think that that was some of my one of my favorite arcs from all of Star Trek, because I don't think that you really have a lot of those things outside of like the maybe Deep Space Nine, where you have sort of like these big episodic arcs. And that was very fun. And so I loved everything that they did there for the most part. And so that really brought it up in my mind. They did kind of breeze through the Spore Drive with the end of the Klingon War. But you know what? Better a quick resolution to something I didn't love than really dragging that out. So overall, I'll go B plus for Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, and I think it really speaks to the way that stories are told on TV dramas now, that we kind of wrapped everything up and tied it up with this sort of falling action episode. Whereas, you know how they always ended TNG seasons back in the day.
Cliffhanger.
And we didn't really get that. I mean, we got sort of a hint at what's going to happen next season, but I would hardly call that a cliffhanger.
Yeah. They did a lot of the cliffhangers once, you know, we had the best of both worlds. And then we had a cliffhanger with Mark Twain, right?
Yep.
one of those times. So,
yeah, we did.
All right. Well, great stuff, Jess. I had so much fun talking about the second half of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I did too. Like, this was something I'd kind of shelved it because I was too cheap to pay up for CBS All Access until the mid-season, and now I wish I'd been on it like week to week, because it's just been so much to unpack, and it's really been a lot of fun to be unpacking it here on Post Show Recaps.
Yeah, well, they already had me from the Big Brother live feed, so I was an easy mark for them, but they did a great job, and it was very fun to go through all of it with you here in the back half. So great stuff, Jess. We don't know necessarily when the next Star Trek Discovery recap will be, but of course, you guys will be the first to know when we hear more about Star Trek Discovery. A little bit of a programming update that Josh Wigler is going to be out of town for a few days. We will not be able to get to our season 3 kickoff of Game of Thrones after last week's season 2 finale recap, but Josh will be back later this week, and he's going to be tackling Altered Carbon.
Oh, I've heard good things about that.
Yeah, I saw a new RoboCop in Altered Carbon. And also for the House of Cards podcast fans, and many of whom say that the RoboCop probably in hindsight should have won some of those elections in House of Cards. A familiar face.
I was waiting for the spinoff series called President RoboCop, and it never came.
Yeah. Somebody at Netflix is being fired. They say we should have. That's what we should have done.
Yeah. I think he's the hero our country needs. Yeah. Maybe not the one it deserves.
No. All right. Well, Jess, great stuff. Follow Jessica on Twitter. She's at Haymaker Hattie. I'm at Rob Sisterner. Thank you guys for listening to all of our Star Trek Discovery recaps, and who knows what the Star Trek podcast future holds. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.